Hello, everyone. Tracy here, your resident business rebel, and you're listening to Digital Business Your Way podcast, the show that lets true stories and insider secrets of online entrepreneur life unfold. Our business world is growing, and as an online business coach and digital product creator, I believe you didn't become an entrepreneur to grin and bear your way through business. So I'll be your guide as we drop in on coaching calls, have intimate sit-downs with online personalities you love, and discuss ideas, opportunities, and strategies circulating our online world. So pop in your earbuds, tap follow, and join me as I demystify this thing called business.
It's not about getting, it's not about keeping, it's about deploying. I want to assign this money a job.
Oh, hello, hello. And I am so excited for today's conversation because it's one that I wish more business owners had access to, right? Especially, you know, right now as people are just trying to get their feet underneath them, you know, for the new year. And that's why I brought it to you. So please listen more than once and share it, right? Because today I'm talking to Catherine Pomerantz, a money storyteller, and she is a longtime friend, but also a strategist who helps expert-led businesses turn big ideas into financially sound companies, right? Ones that can outlive the founder and make a real impact. She brings together tax strategy, accounting, leadership coaching, and of course, the emotional intelligence approach that we love around here, and all of it applied to money. So today we are talking about why obsessing over revenue, it's often the wrong focus, and why you never really keep money anyway. And what does that mean, right? And how do we take that fear away? And shifting how your attention to cash flow really changes things and how your values and your impact come into all of this, all right? Because we're gonna dig into your money story, because the story doesn't begin with revenue and it doesn't end with profit. But what does it actually look like to build a financial foundation inside and outside your business so you can weather any uncertain terms, right? Any kind of uncertainty, because it's going to happen over and over again in different disguises. So how do we do this without spiraling? And what is that sustainability? What can that really look like? So whenever you feel that noise around nothing selling or things aren't working like they're used to, this is a conversation to come back to over and over again to help you see your numbers clearly without buying into the panic. And of course, the resources that she shared in the show notes. So let's listen in. All right. I'm loving this conversation and how we are going to just jump into this whole low-grade panic. Is there a low-grade panic online, or is it always just, you know, massive panic, right? I swear, like, everything is like instant Chicken Little about nothing selling. The buyers aren't the same. Nothing works like it used to. It's like, are we on what, like year three of people saying that?
Yeah.
I swear. So thank you, Catherine, for recording this with me, because I was like, if I'm going to bring on somebody, if I'm going to have a money series, I've got to bring in my money storyteller. It's like, we've got to talk about this. Yes.
I was so happy you asked me, and it was an instant yes for just that reason. I was like, oh, absolutely, I want to talk about this. Because in all honesty, I will take the panic, because at least panic is energy and we can like maybe just like direct you better. I think one of the things that's making me so sad about it is this more like low-grade resignation. Like, I think a lot of people, the quiet quitting trend, right? Of like, people are just quiet quitting, like, well, I can't keep up with AI and everything's harder, so I might as well not. Everyone is sick of harder. I don't want to work harder.
Yes.
And anyway, so I think that energy that I'm also kind of picking up on is like, people just feel really entrenched, and it's so... So here's now why I was like, oh, absolutely. Anything Tracy wants to talk about is, I remember when I was looking for somebody to help with one of my funnel builds, I have a bone to pick with a lot of marketers. I like, marketers exist for a very good reason.
Yes, we do.
But I'm a money person. And so I'm like, I don't care about number of clicks. I don't even care about like revenue per clicks. I want profit per clicks. Like, we need to get more serious. And you had a good sales mindset. And I think a lot of what we're seeing, because that was one thing that so stood out to me, is you understood how to construct something so that drove towards the sale. I'm like, I don't actually care about the flash or the attraction. I need to actually exclude more, because I want the buyer to be like, oh, that's me, and just get it, right? So I think that this is relevant because in many ways we are seeing the marketing versus sales divide. I think I have an online business. I serve mostly online business owners as a tax advisor and as a fractional CFO. I know a lot about developing these kinds of brands, right? Y'all are spoiled by the internet. Like this is
so much.
Y'all are spoiled by the internet. And all that is required is to remember our basic sales techniques. I need you to pick up a phone. I need you to just get in person with your buyer and establish trust the old-fashioned way. And everyone's acting like this is some weird new trend. And it's like, y'all, people are just sick of being online 24/7. So they're not making online decisions. And we all don't remember what it's like when your sales team could be a button.
Yep.
I mean, that's my hot take.
And do it right because it's so true.
It's so true. We're seeing online events converting really high. We're seeing in-person events converting even higher. People are paying for premium experiences and sales cycles are longer, quote unquote. But what's driving it home for, you know, my people who are doing it really well. And I need to emphasize really well. Again, if you're willing to show up and do the work on the right hard things, I am not a hustle person.
Yeah.
The results are staggering because so many people aren't even going to try. They're not even willing to play that game. And so I think I'm excited by a lot of this because it's like, oh, this is why I don't have a strong social media presence or anything. It's like I identified really early on as a money person, trust was everything. And I just needed to, you know, hang out in groups, go and meet people in person. Events has always been a big part of my personal strategy. We do high ticket sales. So of course, like, you know, that one-to-one FaceTime is really important. But I think that that's true for all buyers now. It's like, I need a lot of time with you. And so that's exciting because now we're building a marriage. We're not just speed dating. I really enjoy that we actually get to focus more on authentic relationship building. And now I feel a little outside my warehouse. So I need you to try and make it like, wait, now I sound like a marketer again. And I'm all like over here being like, hey, I don't do marketing.
Oh, yeah. And I always say that too, because people are like, oh, are you a marketing coach? I'm like, no. I'm like, no, because like people have relied on marketing to do all of it, you know, to bring in the revenue, to bring in the profit, to actually make the sale. And it's like, well, hang on, that's actually three different parts of a business. And you're front loading it all and giving it the burden of something it's not supposed to have. And then you're like, oh my God, why isn't it working? It's like, no, the marketing's still doing what the marketing's supposed to. You just now also have to pay attention to the finance part and the sales part.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you know, turn your little turtle over. So it's not like sitting there going, help me, help me, you know, because it's so bloated on the marketing side, right?
Oh my gosh. I'm so glad you said that. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but it's just like, and people wonder why they're having these extreme ups and downs. Is it's like, well, when you don't have a business, you just have a marketing.
Yes.
Like then you are at the whims of the market.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and you know, marketing, that's that marathon. That's that long-term thing. Whereas like sales are those sprints, but they, like everybody always talks about know, like, trust, right? So like know and like is on your marketing side, but trust, once that comes in, that's whenever the sales side comes in. So they are very intimate partners. They do work in tandem, but neither of them is responsible for the other one's job. Right.
Yeah.
And I had a client that I was coaching that said, but we'll always say marketing because it's just sexier and because people will feel safer with marketing. And it's like, I get that, but I'm also open to having that re-education. Right. And saying, okay, no, if we really want to build stable, sustainable, responsible businesses, then we need every single department going. You know, that's just how it is. It doesn't matter if you're one human, you have part-time people, you have a whole team. That's the point of those like different areas, right? Those different areas of responsibility, it's different areas of knowledge. And it doesn't have to feel intimidating. You know, that's something that I try to bring to the table. And I know you do too on the money side. And so I was like, let's have this like full on conversation about this where we get to geek out and nerd out about our monies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a podcast. So I feel like I should just like, no one could see my full body like shudder when you, when you brought up like, well, we can't use sales. That's a word people don't like. And y'all can't see me, but I literally shuddered because it's just like, oh, the money coach in me is just like, hello, friends. Hello, limiting beliefs. Yes. Hello. Like, why is it? that's the other thing is people are like, oh, bro marketing is dead and no more bro marketing. And I'm like, I feel like we've labeled bro marketing just anything that talks about finance, period.
Yes. Anything that feels hard or pushy, right? It's like, oh, let's genderize it and call it bro marketing. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I was having this conversation actually today with someone I really respect who's an energy coach. And, you know, I was pointing out, well, like money has masculine energy. So it desires structure, it desires systems. Receiving, being in your receiving energy, that's mm-hmm. very feminine. But yes. to keep and to save and to grow requires structure. And so money likes the masculine. And also, when did masculine become bad?
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I know, right? I think it was just like, you know, too many internet videos where they rented the yacht, you know, with 800 quote unquote models behind them. Oh, yeah. Like, hey, yeah. look how much money, right? And everybody's like, gross, you know? I mean, because neither of us are into those red flashing things all over your sales page and you only have 10 minutes, which isn't real anyway, right? You know, all those kinds of things feel like it, but let's just call them gross. You know, let's just say that's not good. And that's not something that money enjoys either. You know, that leads to the panic buying and to the remorse and to the, you know, what am I doing kind of thing.
Exactly. You're going to get less impact with your clients. You're going to get less trust with your clients. You're going to get mm-hmm. harder customers to serve. They're going to want more refunds. They're going to be less engaged. They're not going to rebuy. So you're going to be constantly targeting new people instead of just reselling to the people who already know and like you. And that's, hey, my online business owners, let's talk loss leaders. We want to have a low ticket something that just fills the bucket in marketing so that way you can upsell to the more profitable offers, right? That's the core business play. Whether you're a more profitable offer, right? Whether it's the book to proprietary framework and consulting path, whether it's, you know, the quick little webinar to the online course path, like whatever version of this we want to play, like our agency owners, right? Maybe it's like, I've got some great like beginner content and then we've got bespoke do it like done for you services. All of those plays are the same thing. Is it's about figuring out your rich niche, your most profitable customer type. And hey, they're usually the most fun to serve because they take the less resources. That's partly why they're so profitable. And then let's resell to them. And so I think that the gross, you cut yourself off at the knees. You can't do that, mm-hmm. right? It is manipulative. And while it might work in the short term, well, to go back to relationship, you're not going to build a relationship so that your customers should become more profitable over time. And I mean, if they're not doing that, or if you're not even paying attention or measuring or asking that type of question, your business is not sustainable. And I think that's another reason a lot of people are struggling right now and feeling like nothing's working is that they haven't been paying attention to the business fundamentals. And the fundamentals mm-hmm. being, well, of course, I'm going to say the financials because that's what I do. But genuinely, like if your financial foundation is stable, one of the things on our first risk assessment with clients, the first thing we're going to look at is your cash flow. I want to know about your runway. I want to know about the owner's salary. Are you paying yourself consistently? Do you have 6 months in cash? And if not, that's I don't care whatever else we're doing. That is our first targets we need to hit. Because otherwise you can't withstand anything in your business. You are at risk for, right. I mean, well, we were just talking about this before we hit record, but I have two very young kids and it's like, and I, you know, what if we have a third? Like, what if my parents get sick and I need a couple months to help them move out of their house, right? Your life, when you run these kinds of expert personal brands, you don't want to be in a situation where your life is going to get in the way of the business or vice versa. And so financial foundations is how all of that happens. Having a clear understanding of what drives your money, what the activity drivers are that brings money into your systems and how money flows all through your systems and then how money comes back out again as profit, that's sustainable business. And so the money should be in movement. It's not about getting, it's not about keeping, it's about deploying. I want to assign this money a job.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And that's what I like whenever you said cash flow, right? Because a lot of people might have heard have 3 months, have 6 months, have whatever from the sense of personal savings, right? And there's something so like locked door about that word saving, where instead it's like, no, we're talking cash flow because it's there in case, but you have to be willing, able, almost excited to be able to draw into it. Right. It's like using debt smartly, you know, getting into your reserves whenever you need to. right? It's those yeah. kinds of pieces. It's not like you were just putting it into this, you know, giant gold pot and you're never supposed to touch it, right? It's like it's there yeah. to help serve and to keep going with all of the things.
This is one of the things that people understand, like the fundamental nature of money is as a, well, one of it, I have, you know, my let framework that you know of, although I guess I don't know if everyone here has probably heard it before, but I talk about let money work for you. Money should be your teammate. Let it work for mm-hmm. you. And so let is an acronym, L-E-T. And so money, first of all, is a language. There's going to be jargon involved, right? We just identified some of the jargon, profit, cash flow. These words have meanings yep. and we need to understand what they mean in context. But I love pointing this out because if money is a language, you should give yourself a lot of grace if this feels overwhelming or unknown. Because nobody's born speaking a language. Nobody speaks a language when they're born. As I mentioned, I have two young kids. I have one kid who cannot talk yet. We mostly communicate via screaming, and that's right. the best she's got. It takes the human brain literally years to be able to yes. form coherent sentences. So give yourself a break that you don't know this language fluently. It takes time to study and you can hire translators to get you going, right? Mm-hmm. So first let's focus on that, but then let's focus on money as energy. That's the E. The energy of money is the acknowledgement that money does not stand still. It cannot stand still. So as you're describing it as savings and it's locked door and it's moving away, I'm like, even if it's in a bank account, that money is not sitting still. The bank.
Right. They're using it.
Yeah. They're using that money as basis and they're leveraging it to go make more money. And yep. even if you're like, well, I don't want the bank to use my money. It's only mine. You lock it in your mattress. Inflation is going to reduce the value of that money. Money cannot stand still. And so that's one of the things that I also really hope that I can like teach everybody, but especially to the people who get to work with me, that revenue and profit are byproducts of a smart system. Our financial like numbers will naturally improve. So it is far more important to me to be able to measure cash flow and to be thinking about the impact of that dollar. And that's the T. Money is teammate. Money has creative energy just like you do. If you give it a job, it will go work hard on that job even when you're resting. You know, I could have used the word tool, but tools require energy. You have to lift them. You have to work them. Teammates will work right. even if you sleep. So that is exactly, money compounds. And, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, I've heard that. I'm like, no, guys, please. Money makes more of itself. And yes. your whole business is just there to compound money, get cash flow out of the business back to you, the owner, so then you can keep deploying it to the other jobs that you need in your life. So it's all about the flow. It's all about the give and the take. It's all about the receiving and the yummy receiving, not the gross, like, pressure, right? That's yeah. To bring it all kind of full circle, right? Like, this is why I'm not panicked. Like, the fundamentals don't change.
Right? Yeah. It's like they're there. And it can just be, like, how they're being applied. Yeah. You know, because, like we were saying, it was almost like those glory days for the last 4 years of being able to just market, and everything else kind of took care of itself. And over the last couple years, people are like, wait, why isn't this working? Wait, what's happening?
Yeah. Right?
And it's like, okay, well, we need to apply this information, these foundations, this knowledge in this different way.
Yeah. You
know? And where like a brick and mortar has, you know, kind of like five fundamental areas, we are super lucky online to primarily have the three. Right. You know, it's like we don't necessarily have to touch with the other situations. I mean, even operations isn't so much, you know, it's more about the finance side and which, of course, touches on operations and the marketing side, which touches on it and the sales yeah. side. Right.
Yeah.
Because it's just one ginormous Venn diagram where everything interlinks, but they have to hold their own weight. You know,
yeah.
and even whenever you're talking about the marketing part with the loss leaders, right? That's what, and in the internet side, it takes the viewpoint of freebies. But people are just like, oh, well, what's this freebie? What's this lead magnet? And it's like, well, hang on. It, you know, the reason that the PDF was so short lived, right? As like a standalone, here's five things on a fancy looking piece of paper, I'm getting thousands of leads, is because it didn't have the makeup of a loss leader. It didn't give like the real taste. It didn't like yeah. have all of the things in there that not just like attracted people with like a fancy hook, but actually started to build that connection and actually started to make them be like, oh, I love that, right?
Do you know what's been some of my advice to people who are feeling like nothing's working anymore? I've been really challenging them to ask their money. Instead of giving out freebies, make it paid.
Yeah.
Because if you want to know
even a dollar, right?
If you want to know instantly if an offer will work, make somebody pay for it. And so a lot of the people that I know who, you know, because our clients are probably, you know, they're making high six figures, a few million dollars typically if they're needing our types of services. So I mean, I actually see the numbers of what works, right? Not the fancy marketing speak, like, ooh, this launch, we made like 100K in a month on this one launch. And I'm like, no, I know what we pulled to get that number. And I know what they paid out in affiliate fees. And I know what, you know, like, I know all the details, right? The people that are doing super well have a list, have an audience of buyers, not fans.
Right.
Like, you can have fans and that's super useful, but buyers will always trump people who just like you. No, like, and trust, right? I need them to like put their money where their mouth is. And so, I mean, money is energy, the energetics of it. It's like, do what feels good. I'm like, do what people will buy. Like, and that's the same thing. That's the same thing to me, but I know I've like, that's my perspective. I've worked on this a lot, but that really is my challenge to people is like, if you want to understand if your offer is working, come up with a $20 version, $7 version, $100 version of it, get it out. If no one's buying it, shift your offer, because that's the reason that it's not your marketing is bad. It's not your sales are bad. We've seen bad marketing.
so much.
Right. I've seen bad marketing with still a really good fundamental business. There's so many businesses that have horrible marketing and ugly web pages and copy that's just atrocious. And yet the business is great and is thriving and has great financials because the core deliverability of what they're doing is working, right? So yeah, that's my challenge is for everybody. If you're listening, it's like, yeah, let's build a loss leader, but like make it paid. Put your money, like, again, or it's also with ads too. Like, if you're willing to spend money, if you've got a budget for it, an ad is a great way to test offers and be willing to take it down and take it down and redo it. You don't need to change your expertise. You might just need to repackage or shift it or start talking, delivering to something people will actually buy. I think most people's offers actually aren't that good if I was going to really.
They're not.
Yeah. What's the problem now is I'm like, your offer sucks.
Yeah.
And maybe your offer worked years ago, but it doesn't work now. And I'm like, that's also, if you've been in this business, like, I've been doing this 10 years. I don't know how long you've been doing this, Tracy. How many?
Since 2013. I don't know what year is this.
2013. So So 13-ish years. So you've even got more years than me. Everybody in this infopreneur expert online space, they are always shifting the offer every few years because it's what do people need from you right now, right? What are we solving right now, right? And that's normal. That is also, again, we go back to what works about, like, we focus on the sales. Like, this is a normal trend. We shouldn't be panicking. We should have expected this. We should have been paying attention to our data and we should have expected this. We can see the warning signs and we can jump straight in. And one of the fastest warning signs is money.
Definitely. Right. And at its core, that is what a loss leader is, right? It's like anything we're selling for less than it costs to make, you know, and whenever you have like the cost buildup done properly, then whether it's free or whether it's $7, it probably isn't quite hitting it. Right. But it's still there to bring in the right people. You know, so sell it for a dollar, sell it for $7, for $9, for $27, right? It's like, it's all these kinds of things that we do to get that taster out. It's like whenever you go to even like a hair place and they have, they now call them travel size, but they're really like paid samples, you know, that's what they are. And whenever you look at like the cost versus like the volume that's in the bottle, it's way cheaper to go ahead and buy the whole thing, but you go ahead and buy the little one because you're not quite sure if you want to commit to it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of thing that we model here. So I'm curious, what do you find is like kind of the top couple things that people think their numbers are saying versus what they're actually saying?
So I think that people are really bad at identifying what their core offer should be. I think that people are very bad at measuring profitability. When it comes to the client and the offer, like to that level, is that, and those should be different. We should know the profitability of our offer and then the profitability of our client profile, because a client profile should go through multiple offers, as I shared. Yeah. So the lifetime profitability of our customer should trend upwards. And we need to be able to identify, I always kind of think of it as four quadrants. So forgive me, podcast listeners. I don't have the visual for me with you, but like imagine that in the bottom quadrant, is the low cost, low effort client. So the lost leaders, the click a button and they get a thing instantly, right? And then it can go over to the low cost, high effort clients where you're just underpriced and like it's right. not delivering what we need. Then right above them is the high cost, high effort clients. So we're working really hard, but they're paying us a lot. But there is these magical unicorn clients that are low effort, high cost. And that's yes. what we want to be able to identify. And when I really sit down and work with people, especially because marketing is so bloated and they don't have clarity on what types of marketing activities are driving to the different offer types. Now, that can be hard to have clarity. Okay, that's my second point. I'll hold on that. Hold on.
we'll get there, everybody. We'll get there.
When I really sit down and I look with people, a lot of people are like, well, we have $1 million business and, you know, this is our primary revenue. And I'm like, you know what? If I actually cut this offer out and I cut out all the stuff it takes to deliver that offer, you might only have a $400,000 business, but your profit margin just doubled.
Yeah.
Doesn't that sound nicer? Like twice the amount of money for half the work?
Yeah.
That is the types of clarity that as small business owners, it's so easy for us to do that math. It takes some knowledge, but it's so easy. We're not some big enterprise level company with multiple departments and like tons of data to like analyze and aggregate. Like, no, like we are down in the weeds with our people. We can get this information. And so that's the other thing is that your information just isn't very good. I think that mm-hmm. a lot of times we're on too many platforms and we're not thinking about data architecture, we're just doing whatever, we're labeling anything the software defaults labels it to. So if I'm trying to identify your most profitable offer, your most profitable customer, like can I even map the customer cleanly from your CRM through your payment processor to your accounting software? Chances are no. There's almost everyone I've worked with where we're actually trying to build these out. We have to go back and restructure some of the data because they don't name things the same in every place. They don't have an understanding of how data architecture should flow. And again, this I keep picking on my marketers today, but they will often have interesting information, but it's so siloed and they don't yes. flow that through to the rest of the company where the actual delivery of the offers is and everything else. And so that is that's where a lot of the profitability is lost is we haven't mapped the activity drivers accurately. That's what I was trying to yes. say. From client acquisition to client onboarding to client delivery to client offboarding. And the data just isn't clean. It's in too many places. We don't have a source of truth. No one's thought to build it. It's too much effort to build it. Or we're trying to let AI do some of the automations for us. But if the underlying data brain of that AI isn't good, right. I'm nervous for what you're going to be told. I'm really nervous for what you're going to be told. AI is also too agreeable. If you don't know how to pressure test. And I love AI. Please take away the boring parts of my job. Bookkeeping. I run a bookkeeping firm. We do bookkeeping in our services so that we can really help with this data accuracy. I don't actually want to do the data entry. I want to double check what the computer's telling me. That's way faster. It's way more efficient. Yep. I love automations. But we need to have eyes in on what those automations are doing. And that, I don't even know, how many points is this now, Tracy? That's the other thing is the success, true success metrics versus performance metrics. A true success metric is tied to a key project or process that you have identified to drive strategy forward versus just information about how much or how well we're working. Those are different. Let me give you an example. So we had a client who was primarily referral based and she was all like, I mean, you can't systemize referrals. It's just like, you know, they're just, and I was like, bet.
right. I'm like, yeah, you can.
Let's go. Right. And so we really dug into her core values and we really dug into some other, like where her success was coming from and her ideal client profile and all those things. And she realized that thank you was something that she heard over and over and over again when clients were going to refer her or upgrade. And so public shout outs, public acknowledgement and thank yous became the success metric. How often are you hearing thank yous? Because if we're driving that, then again, the financial metrics are going to follow. And it worked. Yep. That is what her team started to chase. That's what her team started to implement. That's what her team started to do. And the numbers came up. That's not a performance indicator. I mean, like it's not directly tied to our financial in this instance, But we counted number of referrals, we counted bottom line of profitability of clients, but we made the success metric the thank you, the project or process driving the result that we want. That's another thing that I think people are like, yeah, I've got KPIs, or yeah, we've got all this data and indicators. And I'm like, but have we done the core understanding of the brand and the money story of the business and how money flows through and what people are going to pay you for and the whys and all the fun sales, marketing, brand speak. Now that's the stuff we love you for. Have we tied that to how we get paid? And have we tied that to how we focus our energy and our activity? And so then people are just doing too much because they don't have that clear, clean focus. That's also where profitability gets lost, is that they're, you can do so much less and get much better results.
You can. And I love that thank you example, because what we say around here, it's like you lead with the people and the rest falls in place, right? Yeah. It's like whenever we put our humans first, then everything else comes in. But it also gives us that like clear idea and path forward versus chasing whatever trend or whatever we've heard. Because something that you talked about earlier was that they have the wrong like signature, you know, we'll just call it like signature offer, right? The wrong top one, because they think this certain thing is what's really bringing it in, but the data is telling them something else. And when I heard you say that, I was like, I feel like that is also one of those, like what they were advertised, what they were sold kind of messages, because they're like, oh, well, this thing is too small to be my core offer. You know, I have to make something else, quote unquote, bigger, be my core offer. We're getting a guest here. Pops is popping in. He loves to be on camera. Luckily the puppy's too small to come up here. But the that's the benefit. But they're like, oh, well, that can't, you know, my audit calls, or like for me personally, I have what's called reset sessions, and they're one-off coachings, right? Yeah. About it's like you have this deep question about something and you just need to work it out. And it's about the next right step, not your next 90 days, right? Which might be in a larger program. So someone's like, oh, well then that, you know, bigger container, that has to be my core, right? These little things can't be my core. And then you're sitting there looking at it from the money going, well, actually, you know, let's reassign these, not based on how, you know, we throw on Instagram or do interviews thinking that this and this is our core, our signature, or this, but it's actually where the money comes from that becomes our core offerings.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's really true. I think it's one of those things where, like, when you're a beginner, frameworks are critical because you need to understand how it works. And then what I like to do is, once you've had a couple years of working somebody else's framework, I need to get you out of copy. You need to up level, right? You're now more of an expert and you need to start looking at your own zone of genius and what you're doing really well. Because for somebody, it might be like, hey, you're doing too many one-off calls and they're not converting enough to higher ticket things. So we need to reevaluate your business model. But that depends also on your lifestyle goals, your time allotments to things, like what other...
The kind of work you're doing.
Yeah, I'm very story driven, right? So I need your story. I need more information in our hypothetical case.
We need a full character workup
to create a story. Yeah, I'm sorry. I am as God made me. But I have given this exact advice to clients before who are, especially in a transition or a pivot, or they need to take a step to do more caretaking. You kind of have one of two models of, you can ramp up and build and become a good leadership. And I now focus on building a high performance team because I need a true business. I want this to stand alone for me. I want my ideas to grow and have impact that lasts, that outlives me, that grows beyond me. That's going to take a certain level of energy and ambition and commitment. That's not good or bad, right? I'm a highly ambitious person, so I'm all in that mode, but I have served many of people who have that ability and capability and talent. And they're going to do a slightly different path of, they're actually going to scale back and create highly profitable, simple offers because they don't want to balance the cost, the underlying infrastructure of going for more.
Yeah.
Neither's right or wrong, right? And in fact, at the end of the day, the owners in both cases still might be paying themselves similarly, which still relates to then the mission and the values and the impact, right? So,
And as you're talking about that, it makes me think of, I mean, because obviously impact, you know, is a huge theme for both of us. But I'm curious, like, how does fear change the way that people interpret their numbers, right? Like whenever we go back to what our profit actually is, what our margins really look like, because they'll focus on revenue, right? Because it's the shiny object.
Yeah.
But they think it equals safety when it doesn't. But then there's this fear going about, well, how do we change it? What do we do? You know, I'm not good at this, right? So many people, oh, I'm not good at math. Oh, I'm not good with money. Oh, I'm not this or that. And I feel like a lot of that kind of is an undertow, which is why they're more willing to just kind of like copy and paste and do certain things. Even if they tweak it, they will follow a structure that they learned from someone else.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is one of the core pillars of my methodology. So the money storyteller method will look at the money story, the money system, and the money map. We've actually talked a lot about the money map today in terms of like, okay, we need to identify like our success metrics, our profitability per customers. We talked a lot about data. And then I talked about data clarity, which is all system, right? That's your bookkeeping, your tax strategy, that's all system. Story is the brand story. So what you're being paid for, the flow through for the business. I talked about that a little bit today too. But what we're now talking about is the personal story, because the money storyteller method works on two layers. You've got your person and you've got the business. Those two need to be separate and they depend on each other. And so fear, if we got down to my core mission, my core, what am I doing? I truly believe I am restoring leaders, founders, high impact people to their true like power and sovereignty, because I'm restoring their right relationships with money. Because scarcity thinking will drive a lot of the what we call toxic leadership or toxic behaviors, or a lot of the things we don't like about corporatism, right? And the way that money or decisions with money are impacting the people in our planet, right? Truly. And all of that gets tied up into money story. So money story is comprised of both the larger like cultural ethos and the cultural context and the cultural stories around money and the way money is used. So we as Americans and the American dream, and like, you know, we are all secret millionaires. We have a very strong self-identity that has a money component to it. Mm-hmm. We're all raised on the Puritan work ethic, even if we weren't raised Christian, but that's such a fundamental part of the money story of Americans, is like, we're going to earn, work hard, deserve it. There's a lot that underlies that structure. You need the cultural context, right? This is going to be different for someone who's been in America for generations versus a first generation. And first generation from where? And are you a male or a female? And like, what religion? All of that becomes your cultural story. Then you've got your personal. And this is where the fear really comes into effect. Because the personal circumstances of your life, all of your core, like big life events, have a financial consequence, good and bad. So you get married. Or you're going to get married, you get engaged, right? We're kicking this off. Okay. Do you know the average cost of a wedding is now 60 grand?
It's ridiculous.
It's doubled in the last couple of years. So
yeah, I was like, wasn't it like 20 grand? Like
it was 27,000 a couple of years ago. So actually, I need to fact check 60 grand, but I was talking to somebody recently who said, oh no, on average wedding, the cost per wedding stuff has gone up 2 or 3 times because of food costs and a lot of the stuff. So anyway, this whole other conversation.
And just like more population, more people, you know, like the supply and demand, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And how bougie and Instagrammable you want all of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But that right there, okay, there's pressure right there to have a wedding that maybe you don't want, or pressure from your family. How many of us had to put up with family decisions involved in our weddings, right? So money's an amplifier. If you have the money, you are going to have the best party. You can still have the awesome party. It just turns the volume up or down. So you get sick, your kid gets sick, you have to move, you take a new job, you get laid off. All of your life events that are big changes also have a financial consequence. And so very often, the things that are like personality forming, the things that are like, you know, big T, little T traumas, money's involved.
Yes. And oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So the work as you as a person is separating out what's my business to handle, because it's my business and my story, and then what I am unfairly associating with money, because money is neutral. It only has meaning because we ascribe meaning to it. It only has value because we describe it.
Did you hear that, everybody? Money is neutral. It doesn't have to be that you know, hot pan on a stove kind of like, oh God, don't touch it. Oh God, oh, you know.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And so that when people are dysregulated around their money and they haven't gone into the money autobiography and they haven't dissected some of that work and then they don't have a good personal system to stay regulated, this is where they're going to start reacting from that fear space. And so this is where you're going to have your stress response guiding you. And our stress response, it's a natural biological process. You're not doing anything wrong. This is how we are designed. But when your stress response is activated, you are in fight, flight, freeze, or fawn mode. That is the true trauma response. So your brain, parts of your brain lose blood flow. You cannot access the parts of your brain that are responsible for creativity and for problem solving. So whenever you are under stress, you have to get back to neutral in order to access the parts of your brain you need to run a business strategically. And so if the way you're telling your money story is heightening your stress, you're just making more work for yourself. And so that is how fear in all of its shape can really hijack our decision-making and make us less effective as business leaders. We might still get results that we like, but you might have to push a lot harder to do it, is what I found in doing this work with people, right? As their CFO and providing that financial leadership for them. Yeah. So, and to go back to the fear thing, is like, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? We have a need for shelter. We have a need for love. We have a need for food. Money buys food and shelter. And then community, there is so much tied to our sense of belonging, being on the right side of human, of being the boss or of being a good person based on how much we're making. I have worked with so many people who have had to become different and get different friends and build different relationships with their parents because their new levels of success is triggering something in the people around them where they're now like, oh, here comes Miss Fancy Pants, like Miss Fancy Bucks. And it's like, they might even be teasing you good naturedly, but that's going to hit. That's going to hit hard if it's coming from somebody you love, right? And so that's where the fear stuff, where you're going to start limiting or playing small without even meaning to, even no matter how much mindset work you do, is like we have to really do mindset work in the right areas and we have to work on the core regulation of the body. And then we get to the decision making.
Yeah. Yes. Because mindset stacks on top of regulation, right? Because you can't even access the part to change things if you're not back in neutral, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And whenever you're talking about, you know, like the love part and how much it's tied to community, that includes even if you feel like you're not making enough. You know, it's
absolutely
so much. And that is when you'll find yourself panic buying, you know, so just like we ideally do not want to trigger that into the people who are buying from us, you know, especially in my community, we work against that. Whenever we're in those stress responses of, oh gosh, I need this revenue boost. Oh gosh, I have to get this to work. Oh gosh, this is my core thing. And if it doesn't work, what's going to happen?
Yeah.
Right. All of those kind of like Chicken Little, the world is falling. Then we are highly susceptible to anybody who's like, I have this system. Just do these six things. Here's this. Just 20 grand a month coaching with me and magically everything disappears.
Yeah.
Right. And whereas like you would evaluate that totally different and you would be able to find the aligned programs and find the places that you actually want to be in to grow whenever you're not having this isn't good enough or I have to do whatever I can to make it work and all those kinds of pressures that we put on ourselves and we often project onto our stakeholders.
What you were talking about is something that like I've seen this so much is people are way over investing in coaching or frameworks or skill sets. And I think it comes from, I think there's a couple ways that we can tie it back to the money map and like what your data is telling you that can help with this right now, right? Where if you know your core of like, this is what makes us successful, then you can easily identify if something is going to support or help that or distract you from it.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think it also goes back to what you're talking about the core different sections. Like you've got marketing, you've got sales, you've got operations, you've got finance. You need the core of all of those to be strong in these areas. And I see people constantly over investing in like, well, it must be a marketing thing. It must be a marketing thing. It must be. And they just keep buying. And like, you've already solved that. You're actually probably way better than you think. The reason it's not working is your operations suck.
Yes, exactly.
Like, or you've already solved this. You already know how to make it work. The reason it's not working is your cash flow is a mess. So you're in hustle mode constantly because you don't have any other solution, right? And so that is the other mistake that I see people think is that they're not considering the different fundamentals of their business and the way that it all works as a system, or they're not asking themselves the ROI. If I know that this type of program is the right place for me to go, like acquire a client lead, for example, I'm going to buy it with a clear like ROI of, okay, if I'm going to do this, I will get X amount of clients. I will X amount of this client type, and that therefore I will bring in X amount of revenue. And so then a year from now, 6 months from now, whatever time frame I give myself, I can look back and say, okay, great. Did I get the client leads? Did I get the referrals? Did I get the right client type? Like, is this the right community? Do I reinvest?
Yeah, right. And the time frame, right? That's a key, yeah. Because people will think it needs to be that instant, you know, be like all of those little like dopamine hit instant gratification things. You know, even with an ad, it's like, oh, I'm going to do an ad and therefore I'm going to get a sale, right? And it's like, well, hang on, maybe somebody is now just aware of you and then now they need to build that time. You know, maybe it doesn't need to be like a sale kind of ad, but it needs to be more of an awareness ad or more of a lead ad. And then we're not looking at our ROI of going to an event or the cost of an ad or anything like that from what happens this weekend, but whether we realize that they build on each other, right? And it's like this same person 3 months later, 6 months later, a year later.
Yeah. That goes back to the core thing we were ranting about at the beginning of the old school works, pick up the phone, stay engaged, build a relationship. Sales cycles are long. People aren't buying. Nah, y'all are spoiled. You're just used to people being able to buy in a 30-second landing page. And that is never how humanity worked up until the internet. And then it was shiny and new and people were into it. And then, as you said, the last couple of years, well, because we've been online 100% because we were forced to. We were quarantined.
Oh, yeah.
So is anyone shocked we want to go outside these days? Like, come on.
Well, and just like the whole new amount of adults, as it were, right? Because, you know, I mean, aside from like the legal age limits, I think most of us are talking to adult humans, right?
Yeah.
So like whether they're business owners, like you and I talk business owner to business owner, but even like business owner to consumer, you know, it's still that case of the people who are now as like demographically considered your buyer now has never not been on the internet. So they don't care about the shiny things. They don't care about all these quick things because it is such old news to them. Yeah. You know, I mean, even little Miss Millennial me, I still learned to type before write. So imagine what happens with the people who are in their 20s now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, all the people who actually are Gen Z, you know, and all these kinds of, I mean, this is old school for them. It's like getting a mailer in the mail would be odder than seeing your latest online campaign. So it's these kinds of shifts where it's like that's that natural growth, that natural change in businesses, right?
Yeah.
And I think that we could agree that like the real fragility financially is that cash flow. You know, because a lot of people love to throw around the stats about the first 3 years in business, the first 5 years in business, you know, depending on the type of business, that's when they fail. And it's like, well, they're not failing because of revenue.
It's like, do you know why 82% of them fail? 82% say cash flow. 82% of businesses that fail.
Yeah.
U.S. Bank did a study on it. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they had to build on debt that now they can't afford to cover. Right. Yeah. So it's not, oh, I'm not hitting my revenue numbers. It's no, I don't have my cash flow in. Right. So to kind of like de-jargon this cash flow world, how would you define a healthy cash flow in human terms?
Healthy cash flow is the ability to earn, save, and invest more year after year. And so I want you to understand the revenue drivers of your business, but then I want you to also pay attention. Profit First is a great cash flow builder. People who follow Profit First are naturally improving their cash flow because what they're doing is they're putting profit first. So rather than just seeing what money is left over at the end of the month or the end of the year, they are intentionally planning to be profitable. And hey, money is your teammate, give money a job. That's my key word. That's my slogan. Yeah. Give money a job, money is your teammate. That profit has a job, and that profit gets divided back up into taxes, paying the business owners, other like runway or savings or other reinvestment or debt payoff. And so healthy cash flow is just having a plan for each of those and being able to grow each of those, is paying down your debts, building up your runway and your cash savings up until about 6 months. I think more than that, then you probably need to deploy that money in more useful ways. It's just going to sit there, like, again, making the bank money, not you.
Right. Yeah.
Paying yourself well so that you also, as the owner, can do this in your own life. You need to be planning and paying for your own cash flow with money in, needs to go back out and diversify your investments. So all those people out there who spend, and I know I sound like I'm throwing such shade today, but the people who will spend tens of thousands of dollars on coaches, but they won't put tens of thousands of dollars in their retirement account. I'm like, how much less afraid would you be right now if you had done the reverse? Because I've heard someone like 10% of your revenue is for coaching. And I'm like, what if 10% of your revenue was savings? You would be a lot less panicked right now. And so I don't mean to shame anyone who made those decisions. I myself have bought a lot of coaching, hundreds of thousands of dollars of it. I am not ashamed of that decision at all. But that is cash flow, is understanding that it is my duty to keep, save, and grow my dollars. I am a steward of this money. This money has a job. It has an impact. And that goes beyond just reinvesting back in the one business and understanding I'm part of a larger system, letting that money flow through the whole system. This is where I get the most woo-woo and most energetic, but I'm like, it is woo-woo. Money is energy. As an accountant, I just happen to actually literally be able to measure the energy. We call it cash flow. Right. Like, you know what is my favorite fact?
And you create like the little channel for the flow, you know?
100%, 100%. And this is my favorite fact about money. The statement of cash flows is a report that measures cash flow, right?
That everybody needs to look at.
Yes, it's a great report. And honestly, you only need to look at the top and the bottom. All the stuff in the middle can confuse you. You're fine, right? You just want the bottom number to be bigger than the top number. Fun fact, everybody, go pull it out and look at yours. Over 3 months, if that number is always bigger, your cash flow is healthy. There you go. There you go. Go impress your CFOs. But that number at the bottom, your net cash flow for the period, cannot be zero. It can never be zero. It will always be positive or it will always be negative. Money cannot stand still. And so if people are trying to like define cash flow or under, I'm like, honestly, let's get a little bit vibey with it here. Let's go like for vibes. Like, let's be in that, like, it's moving. Like, think of it as water. Think of it as electricity. Like, think of it as a dance. Like, this is a journey. So like, get money to come along with you and like give it jobs, get it moving, get your money moving again. That, like, while I talk about keeping and saving and growing it, it's like the growing part, the cash flow part is moving. So I hope that made sense, since that was like a 2 minute explanation.
No, it does, because it, you know, like, we both talk a lot about profit and we both talk about leadership, right? But I like how you describe how your leadership patterns show up in your financial decisions. 100%. Because profit, as much as we love it, it's incomplete on its own.
Mm-hmm. It's also made up. Your profit will change day to day. So it is not the be all end all measurement.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's what, like, whenever you're talking about the success metrics earlier, right? The thank yous, and then the money flows, but it also goes into like the impact that you're after, and how are you choosing to spend the money and put the money in, and how that reflects everything that you do.
Yeah. And what you value, truly. You have so much power. We talk about purchasing power and people here might roll their eyes. I'm like, you have so much power by how you use your money. I mean, we are all business owners. Our day-to-day lived experience will be different by who we choose to hire, by what we choose to invest in, by who we choose to serve. We get to control our lived experience by how we use our money. That's amazing. That's amazing. Right? Yeah. Feel that power, everybody.
We do it as buyers and as sellers.
Yeah.
Like, you know, how we sell things, who we invite in, like all of those key pieces. So whenever you're looking at someone's like money story and their map, like, you're really seeing their leadership patterns show up with like, where are they investing? What are they feeling like is important, and how that regulates their nervous system, but also, like, you know, their fears and what they're looking at and concerned with, right?
Yeah, that's a really great way to loop that back around. So many people buy to soothe, and that's what a lot of marketing is targeting, right, is pain. And so many of us are trying to buy something to solve our problems. So that'll be my other challenge. Everyone here, go buy a loss leader that's paid, go develop a loss leader that's paid for yourself. Go use money to test your offers. But also, don't solve something by buying something first. I would challenge you to slow down, get creative, think through the available resources right now and see what you have to move forward. That doesn't mean don't make the hire or don't make the investment. I'll never give that advice. But so many of us are trying to solve our day-to-day problems or make ourselves feel better or just like get some, Amazon I have two very small children. I love Amazon. I need diapers. I need them in 4 hours, please. Like, I get it. Like, I can't leave the house. I get it.
Yes.
So again, no shame on any of us, but that is another thing that is truly like when we talk about our leadership styles and like money and hijacking our things and fear driving our decisions, it's like, don't use money to soothe if you can help it. It's okay if you are, it's just be aware that's what you're doing, right? That's the core takeaway of money story stuff. You actually are never going to change it because it's your fundamental, like from your family of origin. I don't need you to be better. I don't need you to be a different human. I don't need you to fix yourself. I just need you to be aware of how you show up in that way. And then we'll build it into your system. So that way you can recognize it's happening and you can shift back into high performance CEO mode. And then we all will just move on. Isn't that wonderful?
Right. Yeah. And it goes back to that data, like it's, you're being data informed versus data driven, right?
Yeah.
Because you're able to build it into what you're doing. So that way you can look at the trends honestly, instead of it hijacking the decision-making.
Yes.
Right. And so that way you're not reacting to fear, but rather you're responding to the data and you're thinking, well, hang on, is this actually doing what I want it to do?
Yeah.
And then otherwise, what do we build in? What do we shift? Like, how do we move these things around to stabilize our practices?
Yeah. You know, what's such an interesting parallel is when you describe that, that is how I describe tax strategy. I don't actually want you to do anything different to save money on taxes. I want to make what you're doing with your money tax advantaged. I want you to take all the activity you're already doing and let's just do it in the most tax advantaged way, because ultimately taxes is just one part of your money system. And so if we're, you know, trying to get a big tax deduction, we're often spending a dollar to save 30 cents. So it's actually not that valuable. Oh, depending on the long-term goals, again, the job of this money overall. So it's such a beautiful parallel to be like, this should not I use the word hijack over and over today, but it just feels so appropriate. Like, don't let this change your decisions. Keep focused on everything and then structure it to support that focus. That's really freeing. It gives you a lot of power back.
It does. And, you know, whenever we're talking about like, do it for like the audience first, this also counts as like doing it for us first and the rest flows. Right. Because the reason that we're not sitting in cubes and we're not doing those kinds of businesses is because we wanted that control of things. So anytime that it feels like we're losing that, like in an accurate way, not in a panicked way, but anytime that it feels like, well, hang on, this isn't the way I wanted it to be, then that's again that sign to be like, well, hang on, what else can I do instead? Right. Because it's information. It's not failure.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Highlight. Everyone pause and listen to that one, right? Information, not failure. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. And so I'm curious, what would be like one stabilizing practice, you know, like to help them stop trying to win money, but rather partner with it?
Oh, absolutely. So when we talk personal money system, that is where I think stabilization, because it's how you show up with your habits and your regulation. So I have a money ritual framework. I'd be happy to share it with your audience if you guys want. That helps you. It puts some of the mindset and the regulation up front. Because what often happens for most of us, to your point, it's not failure, it's just information, is that we get into the data and then we get all activated and then we have to like do all this work to calm ourselves back down. I'm actually really lazy. I don't know if you picked up on that. I just want to know what's working. I just want to do more of that, please. Like, so what if we put all of the like getting ourselves into the flow up front and then we showed up with the numbers? So I have a 5-step framework for any financial decision you have to make. If you put this in front of starting to look at your numbers, the experience is going to change. So yeah, I think it's a really beautiful, beautiful, beautiful tool. It's one of my favorites to give to people.
I love that. I love that. And you have the scorecard, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. So if you're ready to look at this truly holistically, if you're like, okay, my experience with money is all over the, or maybe not even all over the place. It's like, I am ready to go after the next level. I want more scale. I want more growth. Or, hey, I do kind of feel a little bit shaky. I do feel maybe a little all over the place. I have my diagnostic, the Money Storyteller Score. It will give you a ranking in each of the pillars. And so you can know where to focus first. Right? Maybe it is money system for you, but maybe you don't have enough of the story work in place. And so this will tell you.
I love that. Yeah. Cause it can also be a safe space to get familiar with the pillars as a whole.
Yes.
Right.
That's the intent.
Way it's like, oh, okay, like this is what I'm looking at now that I understand the concepts of the pillars. What, you know, instead of trying to do it all at once, it's like, which one matters to what I'm doing now? And
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
With our lives, our impact with the kind of stuff that we're really after.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that so much. Please come back. Come back anytime. Anytime you want to talk about stuff. I'm like, because like you and I know, I mean, we've known each other, well, 5 years now.
Yeah.
And the amount of times that we've been on calls and we've just like started geeking out and getting into all of this, I love it. And so I was like, this time, let's hit record on this.
Oh, but yeah. It was a great idea. Thank you.
Well, good. Yeah, yeah. And you know, everybody, the links will be in the show notes. You know, I would say follow Catherine, but other than on LinkedIn, you kind of can't. But well, nonetheless, like you, get in the
if
world.
If you don't take the diagnostic, you'll get on my list. If you don't want on my list, you don't get off it. But I like to write. I'm a religious writer. So I'll send you things like this that we're really thinking about in real time too on my emails.
Yeah.
So.
Right. And getting like those kind of like good digestive pieces, you know, and then of course, if you're like, just take this off my hands and do it with me, then of course people can work with you in that way too. So
yes.
I love that it is that mix of helping to understand, helping to debunk, going through it in that safe way. But then also it's like, okay, great. I know it. Just do it for me.
Yeah. 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 I always tell this to clients. I'm like, at some level, if you understood it as well as I understood it, you'd be running an accounting firm and you don't want to do that. So this is right. One of the things you should hire this out. Right. I don't do my own marketing, guys, because I don't like it. So like, it's okay. Bring in the right experts for the level you're at.
Exactly. Right. And that goes back to it being a language. It's like you're to the fluency level of, you know, like being the interpreter at the UN kind of thing. Right. The little person that's in their ear versus the high school teacher versus, you know, your mom and dad helping you out. Right. So it's that kind of thing. It's like, well, where am I now? And how much interpreting help do I need?
Yeah.
So, yes. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you for joining me here on Digital Business Your Way. Be sure to check out the show notes for all the links mentioned today. And while you're there, I'd love for you to rate and review the show. And if you have a topic or question you want me to answer, I want to hear it. Head to tracypatterson.com/AMA and ask me anything about business. If I don't know it, I'll bring it up with one of my guests. And until next week, be well and have some fun.